Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, well, it's that time again, everybody. It's time for Training Tech Talk. And my name is Nancy Monroe, and I'm joined by the lovely Allison Black. Hello, Allison. They're excited to see you. No, I don't hear Allison Black. That's very strange. Are you on mute? All right, let me mute you and unmute you again. Are you there? Hello? Where did you go? All right, let's try this one more time. Hello? Hello? I don't know what happened to you. I don't send me a Google. I can't hear you if you're talking. Well, this is interesting. I'm just going to have Allison call back in, so I'm going to hang her up. All right. Sorry, Allison. Anyway, while we're waiting for Allison to dial back in, our show today is on tools to help sales managers learn how to be better coaches. And what kind of prompted this is I was at the Inside Sales Association one-day conference in Boston last week, and it was really clear to me that, you know, people are kind of trying to find tools. I'm typing and talking at the same time. For helping sales managers, because if you could just move the needle 10% on those middle performers. Okay, she's back. All right.
Sorry, I don't know where I went, but I went somewhere.
I don't know where you went either.
Into the ether.
Cyberland. So I was just telling the audience that I think the real challenge for organizations, number one, is it's such a competitive landscape in this day and age. But, you know, coming back from that Inside Sales conference last week in Boston, it was real clear that the real impact to the revenue stream of an organization is really in the hands of a sales manager. And a lot of times sales managers aren't really good at what they're doing, but it's hard for them to find tools and resources sometimes, and it's hard for them to admit that they need these to their VP or CEO or whatever, because then it's like a finger pointing right at them saying, I'm doing a bad job.
Right.
And that's, I mean, it's not always the case, but I mean, a lot of times people get promoted to a sales manager job because guess what? They know how to sell.
Right.
And that does
Isn't
not
that the
mean,
Peter principle, Nancy?
Yeah, a little bit. So I thought we would talk about what some of the different tools are there out there to help train sales managers. I mean, there's, of course, the standard, you know, sales consulting practices, and there's tons of sales consultants out there. In fact, I was talking to one today that I ran into last week, and he says, you know, a lot of challenges around this. Sales managers think they have a process, and so I have them explain their process to me, and when it gets right down to it, they don't have a process, or they have a process, but they don't stick to it. So there's actually two sides of this. So then that got me to thinking, well, you know, I've worked with a lot of large sales organizations, and a lot of times that sales manager is being pulled in five or six different directions as far as, oh, we've got this new product launch out, so get this out. Oh, we've got this marketing campaign, you know, focus on this. Oh, we've got this margin issue, focus on this. Oh, we've got a distribution challenge. Oh, we've got a sales channel challenge. And for them to be focused on and to voice their opinion on, no, I'm not going to do that because that's not part of my sales process. And I think they are challenged.
That doesn't go over well.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like, do they all have the gumption or have the culture where they are allowed to say that and stay focused, laser focused on that sales process? Or more than likely what the case is that they're kind of being distracted by some of these other operational issues going on. So how do you help this sales manager either say, you know, you're kind of sabotaging me from what I was here to do, or, you know, let's have an understanding of where my focus should be. And all the studies out there that point to sales managers should be spending 50% of their time coaching.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'll
say
put a link
that
to
again
this.
Really slowly, because
yeah.
that just
yeah.
is a that's a huge thing.
Oh, yeah. So sales managers, if the organization is putting someone in place specifically to run a sales team,
yeah,
and they should be spending 50% of their time coaching their staff. But what usually happens is
what?
They're either having to carry a quota too, so they're actively selling as and a sales manager, so they're wearing two hats, really.
Well, and part of that reason, correct me if I'm wrong here, because I'm just a layperson and not a big seller, is they made more money as a salesperson than they are as this new manager
mm-hmm.
role.
Bingo.
So, of course, that's going to be where they want to be, and
yep.
they're probably more comfortable at it.
Well, exactly.
Wow.
It's less stress. You know,
right.
They're more comfortable with that than the accountability, you know, the target. They're not right on the target of, okay, who are we going to axe if things don't go
right.
well?
Right. Could be me.
You know,
I could be the
yeah.
low salesperson on that totem pole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of things that they have to juggle. And so I thought, well, you know, are there resources out there that they can either just in a self-directed manner? I mean, there's obviously plenty of books and stuff, but how do you practice that? How do you get good at that? How do you know whether you're good or you're bad? So it's interesting. I was sharing with someone I met out there, a potential client, and it's actually the role play that you did where you were pretending to be a sales rep asking a sales manager for some help.
Yeah.
And it didn't dawn on them that, because who do sales managers role play with? Nobody, right?
Yeah.
So how do I practice this coaching conversation? Do I do it with my CEO? Do I do it with
no.
the VP of marketing? No.
No,
they
you
don't
put
have
me
anybody
in this position.
To do
I just know how to do it. You're not going
right.
to want to be vulnerable.
Right. And I share with people, you know, if you're using our emotion analytics, sometimes, you know, sales managers were aggressive, go-getter salespeople. And
yeah.
they can't turn that off sometimes. So if you can measure the emotion analytics in their voice during a coaching session and it comes up that they're still aggressive, you know, high energy, non-empathetic, you know, da-da-da-da-da,
right.
then they think they're helping the sales rep, but it's really sending a mixed message.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, other than the obvious of we're going to be self-promoting mobile role play to let people practice those conversations. You know, I think there's a lot of good books out there, but again, how do you put that into practice? You know, and I don't know if you've run across any, you know, maybe acting classes where they can just, you know, get into the mode of taking on a certain character, learning how to be empathetic, learning how to give good feedback. You know, so I think maybe what they need to do is deconstruct, you know, what they're really trying to accomplish. You know, pick a specific sales rep, deconstruct how they would actually speak to them. And then one of the things I talk about in my presentation on how your voice can make or break a sale, your voice can also make or break a coaching session.
Oh, gosh, totally.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I think from an acting perspective, I don't know great acting teachers, and I've had horrible acting teachers, who, in all honesty, other people have found them to be great acting teachers. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's such a continuum and such a personal taste of what you need and what works for you and personality types combining, which, wow, isn't that like real life? but, you know, you're usually doing really vulnerable things. So it can hurt more, I think. But these coaches, like I remember, Nancy, we were at – I think it was the Applied Improv conference that we went to.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was that, where there was a coaching session with a woman who was teaching people how to be better coaches. And some of those things, I think, are just not intuitive. Like
the thing
that was so critical to me that I wish an acting teacher or anybody else that's giving coaching advice could do is know, first and foremost, that you don't have to remember everything that person says. That was a huge relief to me. It was like, what? I don't have to keep it. No, you're listening for cues. You're listening for words that are halting, words that are giving this kind of indication, and you're going to drill down on those things. So it's really of what this woman was promoting, and I found it to be so interesting that I applied it for the rest of the time we were at the conference when meeting new people and talking to them about what they do. And it was phenomenal. First of all, the relief if I didn't have to remember what they said.
Right.
That was awesome. And then second, really asking probing questions when I heard them talking about something that was blocking them or they were having trouble with, and how do you think that makes you feel? Asking these very open-ended questions. But really, I think at the heart of a good coach really blurs the line between a good therapist. I know, that's crazy. And I think you've got to be wary as a coach when it's time to hand off to a therapist, hey, you know what, I think this is bigger than what we're working on here.
Right.
I think we need to find some help for you, that can somebody that can work with you that's going to help you break down some of these things for you. But it was freeing. And people that I talked with felt that I was, because they would come up to me later, I really enjoyed talking with you. You really helped me break through some stuff. And I just quietly said to myself, oh, my gosh, this stuff really is helpful in getting at the heart of what was a trouble for the person. And that's, I think, what a good coach is. And I don't think anybody ever tells you, oh,
right,
that's your job,
yeah,
is to help them get back out there and do great things in a way that is very different than, say, like a what you might think of that aggressive football coach kind of thing,
mm-hmm,
or
right,
just giving you words of wisdom and you're supposed to all of a sudden have an epiphany and be different, but really helping the person, like a good therapist would do, find within themselves the answer, find within themselves the challenge.
Yeah, and so to follow up on that, you know, because they aren't doing that, or they aren't giving them that skill set, there's a, I'm putting a link to this in there, in a study done by ASTD, which is now ATD, but it was American Society of Training and Development, found that only 11% of companies train their sales managers to a high extent, while 22% don't train their sales managers at all. And then it says, in contrast, the same study found that 66% of those companies train their salespeople on selling skills at least once a year. That's it. Once a year, it's like whoop-de-doo, once a year. And then so that, of course, there's a direct correlation to those companies that train their sales managers had a higher success rate with sales. Duh.
Right. Hello? We're a culture of talking about it or not.
Yeah. You know, so it says, why has sales management been overlooked as a high-leveraged, high-impact training investment that it is? And so they're saying in this article, it's resulted from a persistent and vexing combination of weak demand, low supply in the marketplace. So, you know, so I think people always pinpoint to, yeah, we'll invest training into our sales people, but I think they should flip it. Make sure the sales manager is trained first, and you may not need to make that investment because you've got more salespeople than sales managers, so it's going to cost you more anyway.
Right. Good point.
So So I'm going to put a link to this, and it even talks about how sales managers are not all alike, you know, and then it breaks it down to, where's the list here, the different skills that they presentation skills, call execution, negotiations, and then breaks down the whole thing around, I mean, account management, territory management, opportunities, you know, and how you get really got to get into this rhythm of, you know, I really need to be confident at what I'm doing. And it goes back to that conversation I had earlier with the other gentleman today around, do you have a process? just like when you're designing a course, what are the objectives? And sticking to those objectives. You don't go flying all over the place and go on these different tangents when you're developing a training course. So the same thing with the sales process. Stay on that process. And that way you can coach to it. You know when a sales rep is at XYZ step. What
right.
questions should they be able to answer because they're at this step of the or the stage of the sales process? And if you have it broken in, for example, in the prospecting stage, you know, how are they qualifying leads? And so part of the thing that I talk about is companies spend millions of dollars on getting a CRM in place, creating marketing materials, building their website, building marketing campaigns, but once it gets filtered and it gets to the sales rep, you know, teaching them how to handle, you know, do we respond to a lead within X number of minutes? Do we respond to it? And then how do we respond? So if you don't have that process clearly defined, and then you ask the sales rep, well, gee, we gave you all these leads, and you haven't done anything with them. So if I'm the sales manager, I would be saying, well, the guideline is you are to respond to these within XYZ time frame. You filter them by this criteria, and then this is what you provide to them. So it's almost like you're setting the sales rep up for failure. So the sales manager is setting themselves up for failure too.
I want to back up and talk a little bit about the culture of a sales organization, because it seems like to me there is this huge conflicting thing between we're going to work as a team, which is where the sales manager person, I think, should be placed in, is that team concept of helping one another, helping you get better at what you're doing, helping you sell more of the product for our company, so therefore they do better too. Help you develop as a person. But then this whole sales concept seems to be very singular focused, not team, very much, you know, who's got the highest sales numbers? Who's the highest? Okay, so this is the highest selling team, but who's the highest seller? I mean, there's still this, even if they may not put it on their dashboard, that's often what they reward for. And that my thought is, Nancy, like, asking the sales manager to no longer sell. But here's the caveat. When your team does better, you're going to get a bonus or you're going to get a cut of every sale that they make so that you have some skin in the game in having them do well.
Well,
and
that's
true. Right?
Yeah. But, okay, there's two sides of that argument, too. So I found this information last week or the week before where it says, how do you compensate a sales rep? And so their guideline was, if it's a more complex sale, then you should, because you're having to rely on other people, maybe a sales technician, maybe a marketing person, maybe I don't know, there's multiple people that help you get this product sold, then you should put more money in their base pay, less money in commission. If it's a fairly simple transaction, you should lower their base and up their commission. So going back to what you were sharing, you know, if it's a team, so I have seen, and I've been part of this, if your team is a simple sale, but you have to rely on other people in the team to get to that bonus level, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Because you're always going to have a couple of superstars, and they're going to be demotivated because the rest of the people on the team are bringing them down. If the team is all those people involved in helping you deliver that complex sale, then yes, it does work.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I'm applying a very simplistic logic of when I've waited tables, which is a very small level of sales, you tip out everybody else. You tip out your bartender. You tip out your far back staff. You tip out people that your dishwasher.
Right.
Because you couldn't have gotten where you're doing without their help.
Exactly.
And, you know, but I see what you're saying. You've got somebody who's really selling a lot and haven't taken more tables, but then it's going to cost more to do the job. I don't know.
Right.
And that sounds like it's more of an example of the latter that you gave. rather than
Because I mean, giving that, because you're most restaurants today, you've got the waitress takes the order, takes it to the kitchen, but somebody else is bringing the food out.
Right.
Somebody else has actually set them down to the table. Somebody else is bussing the table.
Yep.
You know, but I remember when I was a waitress, I was all of those
all
things.
Those people.
So we didn't.
And you go to
so
fine dining, which is higher level sales.
Right.
The waiter doesn't touch anything.
Right.
The server doesn't touch anything. They take the order and that is, they check to make sure you're being taken care of, and they're all about your experience. And the food happens without them or without them touching it.
Right. Right. So, So you know, when I thought, okay, we'll do this topic. There should be plenty of tools out there, right? No, it's more. Okay, here's this research paper. Here's this book, or you know, you're paying the high kind of fee to have your sales manager sent off to some conference or workshop.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, how are you going to make that investment? And you know, it goes back to what you're saying, the culture side of things. It's just and supply and demand, like the other paper said. You know, if you had more demand for sales manager training, you'd have a higher supply of it. There'd be more resources out there. And so, but that's a problem. I think we need to start thinking of things in reverse. Train the manager first, then get the rep on board, or hire someone that is successful at what they're doing. It's probably what companies are doing. They're hiring somebody that's already proven themselves as a good sales manager. And depending upon the size of the organization.
Sure.
And the other thing this other person I was speaking to, he says, yeah, when I was in sales, you know, it used to be we had a team and each team had an admin. And then as things started to kind of thin out, you know, the admin might be supporting two teams. Then it was three teams. Then it was like, oh, guess what? So-and-so on your team is now the admin and the sales rep. So you're kind of like, oh, great, okay, I'm making everybody's PowerPoint.
How many of those got, right, yeah, exactly. I need these contracts sent to such and such.
Yeah, or review this, proof this. Yeah, I mean, you definitely need that role within a sales organization. It's just typically now it's the sales rep or the sales manager, you know, monitoring that stuff. You don't have the luxury these days of having those extra hands to help out.
That's what consulting companies get to come in and help you with for short-term projects.
Yes. So here's one that I found, SalesLoft's Top Secret Sales Development Playbook. So I'm not sure if this is exactly what I'm looking for, but so do you know what a sales playbook is?
No.
Have you heard it?
Let's pretend I don't, because I don't.
So let's say that there's typical customers that we might sell to. There's a certain industry, or you know, maybe we sell primarily to healthcare, or maybe it's a certain size of customers. So then we create a strategy around how do we go after that particular type of client. So in there you would map out, okay, we need to target the VP of whatever, and our value proposition to them is this. Our competitors we've identified our X, you know, so sometimes I think that's just a good exercise. If you aren't doing that already, you know, have the sales manager sit down and brainstorm with their reps to say, okay, you know, as I look at these reports, as I look at, you know, where we're selling, where our low hanging fruit is, it's here. Now, do we have any additional opportunities to branch off, or do we go deeper into the same type of sales opportunity? And so you create this playbook, which is kind of your strategy document around there of how you can get into that type of account, how you sell to that account. And again, that goes all the way back to where we started this off with, do you have a process?
Right.
And so it's just, but again, helping that sales manager figure out a way to help build the culture around allowing them to stick to the process. And it's hard. Because, you know, the fast-paced movement of business today is everybody has to follow the next shiny object. You know, squirrel, It's like, oh,
yeah.
Okay, over there. Oh, the markets are down. Now we got to do this. Oh, over there. And, you know, it's hard. And
well,
I know I work for big companies too.
Is the perception, Nancy, that following the plan takes too much time?
Sometimes, yeah.
I know sometimes documented processes feel that way, especially when you're dealing with an organization that's not used to having following documented processes, that they have a lot of ways that they just, we just do this.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to keep in mind that, yes, you have a process document. I'm going to use that terminology because that's something I'm familiar with. You have your playbook. And there are clearly times when the playbook doesn't fit the circumstances,
mm-hmm.
or the process time, and that's what we call exceptions. And we build a process around how we handle exceptions, which could be we hand them off to Mary, and she takes care of these because that's what she does.
Right.
It's really hard. It's really whatever. It's this. It's high touch. Mary's our person to deal with. That could be your process to document. We hand it off to Mary. And
yeah.
Just understanding that building process documentation can seem so not sexy,
mm-hmm.
And so hindering in the now we have this thing to follow, and now we have something that management can beat us up over, rather than seeing that this is a way to be successful, this is a way I don't forget to follow through with certain items that typically get dropped, and really trying to sell the concept of process, especially if you've not done much of that before or there's a real bad taste in everybody's mouth about it, to know that, one, you got to get something down on paper and that it can always be changed and we can follow along with it. And
yeah.
Everybody needs to be able to say, here's how we can fix this. Here's this process would be better if we did this. So that it's not a culture of process being lorded down by management to then have everybody rebel against and try to conform to and all of those awful words that come to mind, but really maybe kind of using the one-minute manager kind of concept,
mm-hmm.
going to the person who's actually doing the process and having them be very involved in identifying what really works and starting
right.
there, getting them to have some ownership of those things so that the person who's saying, I don't have time to follow the process, it becomes hard to do that when you have so much ownership of it already.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I agree. And you're right. I like your one-minute manager analogy. And
thanks.
I thought they came out with a new book recently, but I can't say for a fact. But anyway, for those of you listening out there, if you haven't read that book, it's actually very quick read.
Oh, my gosh, it's so short. So short.
Yeah.
Oh, so short.
It's been around forever.
Down.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a classic. It's a classic.
It is.
But anyway, so I see we are running out of time here. We've
no!
got about the last minute. So if you actually want to try out our role-playing simulator to see if this is something you could use to help your sales managers practice having those conversations, just go to knowledgeshift.net and sign up for free trial, and I will get you into our portal where there is actually a sales coaching conversation in there that you can practice. It'll give you analytics around the emotion in your voice so that you can tell if you are being empathetic or if you're being too aggressive or not open enough and the right level of energy when you're coaching that sales rep. And, of course, you can certainly use it for sales training as well. So, Allison, once again, thank you for joining me today. And I think our audience is also glad they were here, too.
Oh, thank you so much, Nancy. It's just such an honor to be here every week.
Well, I appreciate that. And we will see you next week, then.
Yes, I do, too.
All right. Bye.
Bye.